Christina.
And I'm Alex, and welcome to the TV Overkill Podcast, episode issue, etc. number 3.
Yes, I'm so proud of us for making it this far, because honestly, when we did the first episode, I was like, this is never going to happen again. But it was a really good episode.
It was fantastic.
And this one, I think it's going to be too. We're going to be talking about a couple of throwback shows. Huge, which showed on ABC Family a couple years ago, and then also Veronica Mars, which got cut from our last episode because we didn't want it to run too long.
Cut similarly from UPN and onto the CW.
And then some currently airing shows. We're going to talk about Archer, House of Lies, and I'm going to briefly talk about Smash, even though it's only had one episode show so far, so we're not really going to discuss it too much. I'm just going to kind of mention my thoughts on the first episode and where I think it's going. So we hope you enjoy the TV Overkill Podcast, and we're starting with...
Archer is a comedy airing on FX, and it's third season right now. You might have seen other shows from its creator, Adam Reed, who is really well known for fans of Adult Swim. He did C-Lab 2021. He did Frisky Dingo, which is like very near and dear to my heart. Other works that I can't currently think of.
It's an animated show, and it's about a spy agency, and the main character is like a spy operative for this agency. But I would actually really describe it more as like an office
comedy. It's a workplace comedy.
Because most of the scenes do just take place in the office with the spies. And, you know, it's less about the missions and more just about the antics that these coworkers get up to, which are, by the way, the most ridiculous antics you could ever imagine for any coworkers ever.
I really like that they take this, like, oh, it's an office, but it's a spy agency office, and then they use that to, like, really just make everything, like, a step more ridiculous than you would expect on another show.
Yeah.
I mean, the cast of characters that they have accumulated in the office are already, like, really ridiculous. You have, like, Pam, this really crazy overweight woman who...
She's the HR representative,
yeah,
who is the opposite of discreet in everything that she does. There's one scene where she's just walking by someone's desk with someone else, and she's like, guess who has cancer? And she's also bisexual and, like, very open about her personal life.
My Tumblr is the number one search result for sturdy bisexual, which is what Pam was called by the woman who does her voice in a behind-the-scenes video. So, fun fact there. There's just, like, so many great people in the office.
Yes.
We have Pam, we have Cheryl, Carol, Charlene, like, the receptionist who is...
played by Judy Greer.
And just, like, takes the stereotype of, like, the ditzy receptionist to, like, a whole new level of just insipidness.
In the second season, you find out that she is actually, like, the heiress to one of the largest fortunes in the... I mean, in the fantasy world of Archer. And she just forgot to mention it to everyone.
Yeah.
She has a pet ocelot who's very near and dear to my heart and Alex's.
And Archer's.
And Archer. He's pretty much Archer's favorite being on the planet.
Yeah.
And then the main character, there's so many other characters to get to, but I feel like we should mention the main character.
Yeah, probably.
Sterling Archer, who is like a very stereotypical James Bond, but in the most irreverent manner possible. He's just a cad in every sense of the word.
And he's like also at the same time very intelligent, which, you know, like James Bond, you think like, oh, he's so smooth and charming, and Archer is what that character actually is, but he still manages to be good at his job. Like, this like source of aggravation for just about everyone else is like Archer is obnoxious, but he's actually a really good spy.
Yeah, but he does, like, I mean, it's the kind of thing where, you know, by the end of the episode he usually makes everything like turn out okay, but he is very self-absorbed and will often just like make ridiculous mistakes that just because
cruel.
He needed to stop and, you know, get a drink or change into the right turtleneck.
Yeah.
So, and I can't remember the name of the guy who plays him.
Oh, H. John Benjamin, who I guess just goes by John
Benjamin. Oh, yeah, now. John Benjamin, who has like this amazing, smooth 1960s voice.
I really that like loves. John Benjamin because, regardless of the role that he has, which is Archer on Archer or Bob on Bob's Burgers or the Coach McGurk on Home Movies, he just only ever uses his voice. And yet, yeah. These are three extremely distinct characters, and you can somehow separate them anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can because they're all, you know, very different characters. But you're just like, I will listen to your voice, like, all day, every day. It's wonderful. And then you were just about to mention Lana. Who's the other, like, head spy at the agency. She's played by Aisha Tyler.
Yeah. She's, like, Archer's, like, rival in some ways, in the sense that they're both always trying to be, like, the best at the agency. And they have had, like, this relationship in the past that they're, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, are they going to get back together or not? But they can't really anytime soon because they are terrible to each other.
Yeah. I like Lana a lot, so I don't want her to get back
together. I know. Sometimes you think she will, and it's just like, Lana, have some self-respect. Yeah.
Poor Lana.
Yeah.
She's this, you know, beautiful, intelligent, very capable woman, but she definitely has some insecurities that drive her to date the worst guys.
It doesn't help that she has man hands.
People at the office are always undermining her about her man hands.
Yeah.
So, it's rough. But they have just a very experienced comedy cast doing the voice acting. And the writing is so sharp.
The writing is sensational.
And it's just like joke after joke after joke. So on target. And I also really love the animation because it's kind of done in this style. The way that the characters dress and act, you kind of can't tell what year it is because it kind of almost has like this 1960s feel, like kind of Mad Men / James Bond. But then they'll do things that you're like, well, this is very clearly present day. Like, they have cell phones.
Yeah.
So I just enjoy that. They kind of use the animation medium to play with that. And they're just like, you know what? We don't have to, like, stick our foot in one year and stay there. We can do whatever we want. Whatever looks kind of glamorous. But,
And I think that's even more impressive when,
at the same time.
From, like, an animation point of view, it's actually, like, very, not poorly animated, but not well animated. It's like very much like figures moving on a steady background, in the way that Frisky Dingo was, if you've seen Frisky Dingo, which is very much this show's predecessor. It's just like really stock animation. Like sometimes people aren't moving and they'll just kind of like keep you on their face for a minute. I mean, but you can ignore that because it's like so well done in every other respect that you can look away from the fact that it's really cheap. But
it's still pretty to look at, I feel.
It's a beautiful show.
Yeah, and it's completely hilarious. And I love that they really haven't had that many episodes because it's on FX, so they only had like 12 episodes for the first two seasons. And they're in the third season
10
now.
10 for the first, and then like maybe 12 for the second. But then they have like a 3-episode mini arc, and I don't know if that's considered the second season or the third season because it aired in between them.
Oh,
and then now it's on the third season.
Yeah, so it's like 20-something episodes have aired so far, and I love that they are already able to do so many callbacks to things that they introduced in the first season, like in passing, and then, you know, they'll come back with it just unexpectedly. One of the people who works at the office is kind of this mad scientist guy.
Krieger.
And he just has all of these really weird quirks that you almost don't want to be brought back, but
there's a lot of horrible psychosexual issues there.
Yeah.
And he's done like a lot of terrible things, and eventually it was like, oh, he's a clone of a Nazi, was part of the plot. I mean, just a lot of messed up stuff there.
I do feel that it almost has the tone of Arrested Development, where it's just this group of really terrible people who have no remorse about the way they act. And that in itself just, like, brings up this level of comedy.
Yeah. And it also, I mean, it reminds me a lot of Arrested Development because of the cast comparisons. When you have right. Judy Greer playing a receptionist again, and even, like, more, like, on point is Jessica Walter plays Archer's mm-hmm. mother, and she yeah. even looks like Lucille.
Yeah, and she is a very similar, you know, withholding mother type character. There are obviously differences, and I love his mother is also the head of the agency, and Archer just has some, like, very serious mommy issues that are exacerbated by the fact that he's also working for his mother, and it's just hilarious. It never fails to make me laugh, some of the stuff that
yeah.
results from that. And he also has this poor put-upon butler who has just had the worst life ever and kind of raised Archer, and Archer just treats him like trash all the time. It's heartbreaking, but also hilarious.
And then the episode actually devoted to Woodhouse is, like, maybe one of my favorite episodes of Archer.
The one where you have, like, all the flashbacks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's just very well done.
Yeah. Check out Archer.
Archer airs at 10:30. Oh, 10 or 10:30. I don't totally remember.
It airs on FX on Thursday nights. Check your local listings.
Thank you.
And you can usually find the past episodes on Netflix Instant and sometimes on Hulu. But again, that's another show where they're kind of iffy about, like, the streaming rights, and they'll sometimes pull it for months at a time.
So. It used to be on Hulu, but, like, I was looking earlier today and now it's not.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So it's kind of up in the air. But definitely yeah. check it out if you're looking to just laugh.
Just get a bunch of fat kids sticking in bathing suits and they have cameras. Excuse me. They don't let you do the picture with clothes on. Oh my god, I never would have guessed that. Thank you.
So Alex and I watch a couple of ABC Family shows, and I'm sure eventually we'll get to all of them, but probably my favorite that they've ever aired.
My absolute favorite, hands down.
Is a show that only had a 10 episode run before getting canceled, unfortunately. It was the show Huge,
which aired just about 2 years ago now mm-hmm. and took place at a fat camp and was full of teenagers trying to lose weight.
And starred the star of the movie Hairspray.
Yeah. What is her name?
Tracy was her name.
I forget. I know it starts with an M. No, that's not true, is it?
I don't know.
I was thinking about it on the way over, and I couldn't think of it.
I'll look it up on my phone.
I kept thinking Marissa Janet Wincart, and I was like, that's not her. That's a totally older woman, but of the same type.
Yeah, so anyway, what the show was about is these kids at this camp, and we were talking earlier about how much we just love this cast, because they really did a good job of showing kids with a wide variety of interests, and it's almost like a Breakfast Club type of, you know, you've got, like, the musician and the jock, the popular girl, the girl who's into LARPing,
yeah.
and kids who are just kind of coming to the camp with a lot of different insecurities that don't necessarily have anything to do with their weight, and they're all very unique in that way. And over the course of the 10 episodes, which I think was supposed to be, like, half of the summer, and then they were going to do yeah. another season, which was the second half of the summer. They really bond and kind of take on some of each other's interests and break down barriers in a way that I felt was completely not corny and very authentic. There were just a lot of characters who were like, hey, you know, just because I'm really good at sports doesn't mean I can't participate in your LARPing thing. And then there's this one kid who was, like, really obsessed with the musician kid and really wanted to be friends with him. And it was just this great, like, subversion of that normal,
yeah,
you know, on TV you normally see, like, kind of the nerdy artsy kid, like, wanting to get in with the popular crowd. And in this case it was, like, the kid who had just played sports for his whole life is like, please be friends with me, you're so cool, you have a guitar.
And what I really liked was the kid with the guitar was like, I can't wait for him to leave me alone. Just like, I need someone to get him off of my hands.
Yeah, he was like, why does he have a man crush on me? I don't understand.
Yeah.
So I just really enjoy the whole cast.
I think it's interesting that a lot of the cast has like gone on to do more work, because I think based on the fact that like everyone on the show was like not like within like the Hollywood standard of beauty, you wouldn't necessarily expect that. But like a fair amount of the cast has gone on to other roles. At least two of the cast members have been on Glee. The star whose name we can't think of has done other work, obviously.
Still looking it up.
The jock's best friend, whose name I forget, like went on to be on like a really well-acclaimed indie movie. So I really enjoyed the show for a lot of different reasons. I mean, I'm fat, so seeing it have a watching a show about kids at fat camp, and there was like a whole dynamic. I mean, I think if you were to like hear about the show, you would expect it to be about like, yeah, we're gonna like learn to love ourselves.
Oh, Nikki Blonsky.
Thank you, yeah. Nikki Blonsky. Like her character specifically is like the protagonist of the show to some extent, and a lot of her issue is when she gets there, she's like, I don't care what I look like I don't care about this, I don't want to be here. And
she has this awesome line in the pilot when they're like, you know, they're like using all of that like very upbeat, like, you know, we can all lose weight together terms, and she's like, I think that this might be the summer where I gain even more weight. Yeah. I feel like inside of me there's an even fatter person just trying to get out.
And then, like, you know, there would be ways in which that was turned on their head. Like, one of the episodes involved, like, the first weigh-in of the camp. And then you don't get to see what her weigh-in is, but you do know that she's lost weight, because there's initially, like, this, like, look of, like, happiness on her face. And then there's, like, this immediately clamped down on it. Like, I am betraying my own ideals. And she's obviously super conflicted about it. And, like, the girl who's there, the thin girl of fat camp, finds out that she's actually only lost like a pound or something, and she's just like devastated and lies and says she's lost a lot more. And I don't know, I felt like there were like a lot of interesting politics to go along with it, and it wasn't, I think a lot of people, and I remember reviews at the time that it came out, were expecting it to be a show about like The Revolution, which is currently a show that airs on daytime ABC, as like, oh, we're learning to empower you, you're gonna lose weight and take control of your life. And Huge didn't really take a stand on where it felt about that, because some of the characters really did feel like that was the point of going to this camp, and other characters were definitely empowered without losing weight, or were already happy with themselves. So I really enjoyed the different ways that it looked at things. There were no like real heroes and villains.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. At the beginning of the season, they kind of set up like a popular Mean Girls crowd and kind of like the losers crowd, where the main girl Will is like the kind of the leader. And you know, just over the 10 episodes,
the boundaries were completely erased.
They get broken down, and the show does a really good job of giving scenes that, you know, very quickly humanize the mean girls of the camp, and just really showcase some of the great side characters, like the counselor Poppy, who
Poppy was so fantastic.
Yeah, like everyone who watches the show is just kind of becomes obsessed with Poppy, because she's just like a very upbeat, crazy,
every
peppy
stereotype
person.
Of like that way too into it counselor. And in real life, you'd be kind of like, oh, I'm not a fan of Poppy. But watching the show, you love Poppy. I remember at the time, like, the AV Club was reviewing the show. And, like, every week, Todd Vandenberg, who was reviewing it, would be like, Poppy! Oh, my God! Because she was just so fantastic. Like, this upbeat, like, playing by the rules. But she also had vodka under her bed. And then there was, like, kind of unexpectedly this, like, revelation that she was asexual. And you kind of expected maybe that they weren't going to do anything with it. And then it totally was part of the plot in other episodes. Just like a lot of really unexpected things were happening with Poppy.
Yeah.
With all the characters, really.
It
were
really
all these
is
great
like,
twists.
Looking back on it, I cannot believe how much they covered with so many characters in just 10 episodes.
I know. Like, even in the beginning of the show, like in the first episode, I wasn't a I wasn't a huge fan of Huge. I can't believe I said that. But, you know, you had, like, Will, who's, like, this rebel girl, and Alistair, who is, like, in the beginning, like, the very stereotypical, vaguely feminine gay guy. And then over the course of the show and into the finale, like, they definitely play with that. And because the show aired and never got more episodes, there's, I think, like, a debate as to whether or not he was gay or just transgendered. Just, like, a lot of, like, things that you wouldn't expect to see in a show about teenagers. And especially on ABC Family, where you're seeing, like, Pretty Little Liars or The Nine Lives of Chloe King.
Right, yeah. It was definitely... I think that the writing staff kind of had a little more realistic view of how teenagers' yeah. lives work. And there was definitely what I thought was interesting is, you know, even, like, they really just covered so many things. And even, like, at this camp where you're kind of isolated from the world and you'd expect it to be a place where writers could kind of isolate their characters from things that aren't as real, they had issues like socioeconomic differences between yeah. the kids. And some people, you know, not getting the things that they really wanted and having to, like, try and fit in. And they also were, even just with a couple episodes where the parents would come for Parents' Day, they did a really great job of showing those tensions and, like, the relationships that the kids had with their parents and kind of how they colored their behaviors at the camp.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, you know, it's only 10 episodes, so it's kind of like watching a British show. I'm pretty sure it's out on DVD somewhere.
I actually don't think it's on DVD. I'm pretty sure it's on Hulu, though.
Okay.
At least it was up until sometime last year.
Okay, well, if they've taken it off Hulu, then it's probably to put it on DVD.
Yeah.
So check Hulu first, and then see if you can find it on Netflix. But it's just, like, such a great, uplifting show. And if you're ever, you know, looking for some comfort food television that
definitely
actually, like, challenges you in some ways, then, like, it's definitely something I would recommend.
Yeah. If you're also a fan of, like, I mean, a similar show, obviously, would be My So-Called Life, and I believe this is from the same creator of My So-Called Life, and her daughter made it.
I didn't know that.
I mean, people love My So-Called Life, and I'm not actually one of them, so I apologize to everyone in the world, but it's a very, like, realistic portrayal, and I think it doesn't have to just specifically, like, skew to, like, teenagers or just young people,
yeah.
because I remember at the time the AV Club comments were all from people in their 30s and
yeah.
40s.
And it does have adult characters, the counselors, the trainers, and then Gina is the doctor, like the head doctor.
Oh, no, I was, I forget her name, the head counselor, the woman who ran the camp, Gina, the actress's name, she was on Firefly.
Oh, yeah. Gina Torres, she plays Dr. Rand.
Yeah.
She's a really great character, and she is a recovering overeater, and so she kind of has some subplot that deals with her kind of personal journey with that and her struggles in, like, trying to be a leader of these kids, and then also feeling like she's kind of struggling against the same things that they are.
Yeah.
But also, you know, struggling to connect with them because they all look at her and see a skinny person who's not dealing with their issues. So that was definitely very interesting. And if you were a fan of her on Firefly or Angel, which I think is her two most famous roles, she played Zoe on Firefly, then you should check it out just to see what she's been up to.
Yeah.
Ever since Whedon gave up on her. So, Huge by ABC Family. Check it out on Hulu or DVD. Hopefully.
Wherever it is, definitely worth finding.
Okay, so next we have another throwback. For this week, it's Veronica Mars, which was originally supposed to be on our last episode, and then we kind of cut it because we spent so much time talking about Skins. But Veronica Mars, yet another teen show. I promise we do watch shows about adults,
But I can't help the fact that there are so many excellent shows written about teenagers.
There are. And I think that, like, it's, especially the past decade, it's been a very, like, popular age group to examine because, you know, everyone went to high school.
Yeah.
And so you can tie it in with that. And then I think also the people that are, like, getting into their 20s and 30s now and, you know, were, like, you know, since 2000, people just kind of feel younger for longer nowadays. Like, I think that people tend to still relate to teenagers a lot. And
plus, this like, is like a generation the of, pick. Like, yeah, nostalgia.
Yeah.
Like, we're already reminiscing about things that happened yesterday.
Yeah. So. But, ironically, we're saying all this to preface probably one of the most adult shows about a teenager that I've ever seen. And I don't necessarily mean that in that they have lots of sex and do drugs. It's about a mature person.
Yeah.
Who really, I mean, she sometimes, like, does make mistakes and overreact about
stuff.
She
has those teen moments.
For the most part, she is usually the most mature person on the show. And
except for her dad.
Except for her, well, sometimes.
I think in general, like 90% of the time, he's more mature than she is.
Yeah. But when the show starts, and well, for all three seasons, she lives with her dad. She's a junior in high school in the first season. And then in the last season, she's
in her freshman year of college.
A freshman in college, and she still lives with him.
Yeah. The first season of the show is set during her junior year, but a lot of the plot has to do with things that happened in her sophomore year, which was when she had this incredible best friend who was then tragically murdered.
Yeah.
And if you somehow didn't know, Veronica Mars is, at least in the first two seasons, a season-long mystery show. So in the first season, we are trying to figure out who killed Lily Kane.
And then the second season is about, like, a bus bomb or something. It's not as compelling as the Lily Kane murder, but by the time you get to the second season, you just love the character so much that you're not necessarily tuning in every single week. I might prefer it
to the first season.
Really?
But I know I'm in a minority, but I love the bus crash season.
I love it. Well, alright, we can talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
Anyway, but Veronica lives with her dad, and they just have this really great rapport. It's all, like, very dry wit. And
they respect each other, which is not so common on shows, I think, to have, like, a good relationship between a parent and child.
Right.
But they really do see each other as equals in a lot of ways.
And it's pretty rare that they butt heads. Normally the only time they do is just because Veronica, you know, being a teenager with a single parent often exerts, like, her independence a little bit more than her dad would want her to. And I think that because of what's set up in the pilot, the events following her best friend's murder, her father was the sheriff, and he was eventually fired because they could not resolve the murder.
It didn't help that he believed that Lily's father had killed her. And because the town was so indebted to Lily's father, who is like a great scion of computer technology, they really turned against him in the court of public opinion. His wife left him, and Veronica is now in a single-parent family. They went from being, like, a middle-class family to a lower-class family. And in a town full of socioeconomic tensions, this was, like, a really big, dramatic change for her.
Yeah, and they're, like, pretty much just disgraced as a family. And it's made very clear that she is socially alienated at school because of all of these events. And so, from the get-go, you know, she is just very independent and forthright and very cynical about life, which I think she kind of softens a little bit in the second season. Once she works through some of the Lily Kane stuff, she kind of opens herself up more to friendships and to love interests. But at the beginning of the first season, she's a very cold character, but the audience, you know, can see her reasons, and she's still a very sympathetic character.
Yeah.
It's just clear that she, you know, has a lot of walls up. But the reason that you should watch this show, if you're not just looking for a, you know, show centered on a strong female character,
which you should be looking for, yes. But we'll ignore that for now.
But if you want, you know, another kick, and it's not just have a compelling season-long mystery, which seriously, like, will make you, like, this is, especially the first season, is the kind of show that I just,
it's
like,
gripping.
Needed to see the next episode, because I was like, what happened? And every single episode, you get just, like, a little piece of the puzzle.
I watched the show with my mother on DVD, and after the first episode, she's like, I need to know. We need to watch the second one. And we would just go through, like, 4 or 5 episodes at a time, because it's so compelling.
Yeah, and it has a lot of great flashbacks to just a year before, but it's so heartbreaking to see what a difference a year made in Veronica as a character, because, you know, she
goes from
so
this
sweet,
like,
innocent,
sunny disposition to this, like, cynical, kind of hard shell.
Yeah.
Even though she has, like, even said, she's a marshmallow underneath it all, but she doesn't let people get that far.
But to go on top of that, you've got not just the dry wit between her and her dad, but she is, like, the queen of one-liners.
She is.
And I love the dialogue on this show. It was written by Rob Thomas, who also wrote Party Down, and it's just consistently witty and funny, and, like, so many lines that I use now in my everyday life, because I'm not creative enough to come up with witty things on my own, come from this show. It's, even though it can be really dark and it's like murder-driven plot and it tends to be kind of procedural, her dad owns a private investigation agency, and so she helps him out with that, and so every episode has kind of like a little mystery that she's working on to bring in cash for herself. Even though it can be kind of dark with those plots, it's always just like very light, rapid fire banter between her and her friends and her dad and kind of her nemesis.
Yeah.
Can't really narrow it down to one person. And so it's just such a pleasant viewing experience.
Yeah. If you, I would say, like any of the screwball comedies, of like 30s and 40s, this is like a definite throwback in terms of the dialogue that they're using.
Yeah.
I mean, made more adult and modern, but to elaborate on what Christina was saying, I really love that there really isn't a character on the show who isn't someone with a quip in their pocket. Like, everybody's got something to say, and it goes by very quickly.
Except for the journalism teacher who disappears after like that episode, so don't worry.
Sydney Poitier's daughter, Sydney Poitier. Mm-hmm.
I forgot that that was her name. Oh my god.
Yep, they just changed the spelling.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, she disappears and she's not very interesting.
Yeah.
Everyone's really funny. I think even in the second season, where there are a lot of new characters who some of them aren't so great. Like, specifically, there is a new girl at school named Jackie who people have a very divisive opinion about. But even Jackie's
like
got her
Jackie.
Lines. Yeah, I have a lot of different feelings about Jackie, but I, on the whole, I think would like her.
So the show stars Kristen Bell and
Enrico Colon.
I don't know.
He's on the shooting.
But it also was one of the first really big parts for. Oh my god! Her name just went out of my head.
Amanda Seyfried.
Yes. Who
Seyfried, whatever.
Is now a bona fide movie star. She was in Dear John and Red Riding Hood and a lot of other ridiculous stuff. But before that,
she was on
Big Love, and she plays the character of the murdered best friend, Lily Kane, and so she only appears in flashbacks. But
and sometimes as like random ghosts in Veronica's head.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so she's never, like, really there, but she has a really great role, which I personally think she plays to perfection. And you can almost see what I love about her character, I think, is that, you know, when she and Veronica were friends, Veronica was the sweet, sunny one, and Lily, actually, was a very cynical person.
Yeah.
She has a lot of, like, very serious personal issues. She was kind of the black sheep of her family and feels like her parents don't love her. and as much as they love her brother. And so she, you know, was kind of bitter and cynical. And it's funny to, like, look back and see that relationship and see, even though when you see the young Veronica and Lily together, it almost doesn't make sense, them being friends. But then you see the developed Veronica and how much her real personality was reflected in Lily, and she probably would have grown, you know, more into a person like Lily.
Yeah.
She does grow more into a person like Lily, but I'm just saying that, like, had Lily not been killed, you would have seen the similarities more plainly. So I think that's interesting just to see that reflection in them as friends. And I really love seeing Amanda Seyfried in that role because it's really the only time that she's played someone. I can't really think of another role where she's played someone like that kind of bitter, cynical humor.
I haven't seen a lot of her body of work, but in what I know of the rest of her body of work, I get kind of sad that she doesn't have roles as good as
she tends to just play kind of sweet, innocent people. Yeah. Not to say that she doesn't bring the same depth to her other roles. I'm just saying that, like, this, you know, this definitely stands out as something different from what she's normally typecast as.
Yeah.
She also played the girl in Mean Girls who thought that she could predict the weather with her breasts. So it's another color in her palette. The other, I guess, like, person who I think should be a bigger star than he is on the follow-up is Jason Doring, who plays Veronica's nemesis at the beginning of season one. And he's a major character throughout the rest of the three seasons.
He grows more and more important as the show goes on.
Yeah, but he kind of plays, like, the poor little rich boy stereotype.
Logan Eccles, for the record.
Yeah, and he has a reoccurring role on The Ringer, and he hasn't done that well professionally
following the series.
But he does a great job, in my opinion, and he's kind of like an off-the-wall character. And
he's a jerk.
He is a jerk, and he has, like, a serious need for self-destruction. But at the same time, like, you really cannot help loving that boy. Or at least I can.
I can. I mean, I think it's a vast majority of the show's audience who would say they love Logan Eccles.
Right.
I know I have a friend, Candace, who, like, absolutely can't stand him and is, like, offended that people
is
even remotely
Duncan
like
fan?
Him. No, she just hates Logan. And I, like, definitely can see why, because on paper, Logan is, like, the worst person ever. But, he's funny. There's, like, a lot of, I think, depth to his character.
I think that what I like about him is that he is a jerk, but he is a very smart character.
Yes.
And he's one of the few people on the show who can really go head-to-head with Veronica, like, intellectually, because she's a very intelligent character.
Yeah.
And can call her out on her shit and really challenge her in a way that most of the other characters
really can't.
Just are kind of dumbfounded by her wit and, like, let her get away with things, or are kind of in awe of her abilities. And very few other characters do that.
I think a lot of, like, I would actually say, like, every character on the show, basically, other than Logan, I mean, they have their moments and they're, like, quippy characters, mm-hmm. but there really isn't anyone who's Veronica's intellectual equal, even, like, Duncan, who is her ex-boyfriend at the start of the series,
or
Wallace, even.
Equal.
Like, I don't really see her having competition, and it kind of, like, gets her in trouble because she kind of does think that she's better than people to some extent. Mm-hmm. But, like, as Christina was saying, like, Logan is at that level for Veronica, and they, like, really hate each other, but at the same time, like, they have this chemistry because they, like, really relate to each other, and it's just a real love-hate thing.
Spoilers, more love than hate. Like,
yeah, more of a love than hate. But, I don't know, I just think it's, like, such a great show. I know, like, as it goes on, like, people don't like the third season, and I can't blame them. I don't really recommend it. But the second season, I really love a lot.
I think that the third season dropped off in quality from the high school years, and unfortunately it was canceled because it was it was her going into college, and I think that they were kind of finding their footing in the college world, and I think the fourth season probably would have been better if they had either done a second year of college, like coming in with how do we do this, we've already had a year to figure it out, or if they were talking about just doing a fourth season that
skipped college,
like skipped forward to when Veronica
FBI.
Yeah, it was like a rookie in the FBI. So I am disappointed that I didn't get to see those. I do think that if you were not a long-term fan of the show and you go into the third season knowing that it drops off, it still has enjoyable plots
and
episodes, and it still has that same wit. It's just not the same compelling mystery that's pushing you forward. And a lot of the main cast kind of gets shook up, and some people's favorite characters left the show, and some new characters get added that, you know, were
don't
no one's favorite Parker. So. So it was kind of having a growing pain season, but then it got canceled, so.
I mean, I actually am glad that it got canceled, mm-hmm. because.
You think it would have kept going downhill?
I mean, I see no redemption in the fourth season. Like, had it continued in college, I don't see it. There are a lot of shows that are set in high school, and then eventually, you know, you can't stay in high school forever, so they move everybody out to college, or One Tree Hill actually skipped into college entirely, and I think that might have been the most intelligent thing I've ever heard of One Tree Hill doing. But I think a lot of the magic of Veronica Mars was that it was set in high school, and it kind of had to stay there.
Yeah, and so, she was like a precocious detective.
Yeah, and I didn't really like the college years, and I hated the premise of the FBI stuff, and I didn't like the proposed like little clip they made of it. So I wasn't really excited.
I think that I would have liked at least like a half season where they could have wrapped up some of the storylines that they had going on at the end of the third season, because they did have a lot of cliffhangers.
They did.
But I do agree that for the most part, a lot of the characters had kind of run their course. Like with college, they really didn't know what to do with her dad and with Wallace, and it kind of
was a lot of Mac.
I don't know. There were a lot of weird storylines, but if you watch the first two seasons, you're probably gonna watch the third season
anyway.
Just be prepared for, you know, less quality. But the first two seasons are just amazing, and some of the huge comedy stars and TV and movie stars that you see today. Our guest stars on this show, they just had an amazing casting director. Aaron Paul has an episode on it from Breaking Bad. Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas and Zachary Ty Bryan of Home Improvement are on Veronica Mars.
Adam Scott
from Parks and Recreation
was on an episode with, I believe, Leighton Meester.
It was Leighton Meester before
from Gossip Girl. So, the show came out in 2004? Yeah, 2004.
Yeah.
And this was right before a lot of the shows that are on TV now and are, like, these, you know, flagship shows for certain networks came on the scene. And so, there were a lot of people who were, like, just about to make it for, like, what we think of as the current TV landscape, who guest starred on the show and had whole episodes devoted to them, that you go back and it's like every
single
episode, you're like, I love this person. No, I love this person.
When I first started watching it, I was like on Tumblr at the time, and every episode I created this own tag of I love you casting agent, because every episode Veronica Mars has somebody in the background. And like, not even, you're right, because like a lot of people who went on to be important to the television landscape or on the show, but also really random people you wouldn't expect to see ended up, like, people I remembered from childhood television shows and movies would just, like, randomly be in an episode and I'd say, oh my god, I recognize her.
Mm-hmm.
And then people who aren't even recognized for the television landscape today, but, like, really, like, very early in their careers ended up on Veronica Mars, like, Ari Grainer was in an episode of Veronica Mars, and now she's in movies. She was in Nick Nora's Infinite Playlist, which I think is like her big like breakout role. And this was like 4 years
before
that.
Was she the girl on Entourage?
I don't know.
She dated E.
You're asking me about Entourage is like asking me about One Tree Hill.
Okay, well, anyway.
Yeah.
Check out Veronica Mars. Learn what an 09er is.
Yeah.
And just enjoy yourself, because once you start, you're going to love
it. You will be powering through
it. You're going to love it.
You won't stop.
Yeah.
It's Pringles.
Okay, so following up on the whole Kristen Bell trend, I just need to comment on House of Lies, which I know that Alex has not seen this at all.
But I've read the reviews.
Yes, and I'm just really upset. I'm so upset about it.
On paper, this should be a great show.
I had really great hopes for this show because I love Kristen Bell from Veronica Mars. I love Don Cheadle on A Bed of Rice. And I love Ben Schwartz, a.k.a.
Jean-Ralphio
from Parks and Recreation, who is hilarious. He is a hilarious actor.
He's fantastic.
And so I was just so excited for this show. I read some reviews where they talked about how Don Cheadle has a son on the show who is trans, and he's like 8 years old, and Don Cheadle's totally accepting of it. And they do, that is like the only thing I like about this show. Like, they do have a really great rapport. But I watched the first episode and I was like, okay, that was kind of stilted. You know, it was a pilot. Maybe it's going to get better. But I think that what it boils down to is they decided to put all of these really great actors on a show about a management company. No one cares about how the management world works, okay? People like to watch shows about doctors and lawyers and ad agencies because they're glamorous and, like, you're interested in how that world works. Well, you disagree about that.
I completely disagree. I mean, some of my favorite shows are about things I thought I would have no interest in. Arrested Development is about a development company building houses.
That's true.
The Office is about a paper company in Scranton.
But what those shows did differently is, first of all, they created a bunch of compelling characters, and they wrote funny episodes, which this show does not do at all. Basically, every single episode is formulaic. It's this team of management consultants comes to a company. There's some kind of issue. They do a lot of bullshitting. They almost don't get the job, but then they do because Don Cheadle pulls something out of his ass, and then they all go home with very smug looks on their faces. It's the kind of show where the actors deliver lines with looks on their faces like, oh, isn't this clever? But it's not clever. It's just kind of like, bow it. I'm just very disappointed. I'm mostly disappointed because I wanted this show to be good.
It looks fantastic.
I wanted it to be so good. And I don't think that it's going to hurt the career of Kristen Bell or Ben Schwartz or Don Cheadle. I just really wanted it to be a success. And it's already been picked up for a second season, which means that all of these talented people, instead of moving on to something worthwhile,
are stuck on Showtime,
are going to be doing this
year.
For another year. At least they're getting paid. I don't know what to say.
I mean, I know that I'm not going to like the show when I get around to watching it, but you made it sound exactly what you said about that you don't like about House of Lies is everything I don't like about Mad Men.
I mean, Mad Men, at least for me, has like a lot more wit to it and like more interesting characters. The characters in House of Lies are just so shallow.
Yeah.
And I know that like giving the opposite of a recommendation on this podcast, I'm not really sure how that's going to help out our listeners, but just so you know, House of Lies, it doesn't get better and it's not worth your time. You're welcome. So, one last thing that I just have to gush about, and I know that Alex also has watched this, but I just really want to know what people are thinking. So when you do comment on our iTunes page, feel free to talk about this. Or, you know, if you know us personally, get in touch. Because I am currently a little bit obsessed with the new NBC show, Smash. Now, this may be because I was the kind of person who pretty much exclusively listened to musical soundtracks when I was in middle school, and so when they finally came out with a show that's not just a musical show like Glee, where they put contrived... I have complicated feelings about Glee, but they don't just, like, contrive reasons to put songs in there. This is a show about the making of a Broadway musical, and it stars people who have starred in Broadway shows, and it has just a really great cast, and it avoids a lot of the pitfalls that I think Glee has come to over the years. It's definitely not afraid to take kind of a darker look at certain aspects of it. And it just has more gravity, which I think that a lot of times when people think musicals, they automatically think, oh, this needs to be a comedy and it needs to be really light. And they lose a lot of, like, the inherent drama that usually, like, causes people, like, in a Broadway musical to be moved to song. So I'm very, very excited about this show. I loved the pilot. They're using a mixture of original music and popular songs. You know, they had her one girl sang an audition, and she sang Beautiful by Christina Aguilera, which I don't really think anyone would ever sing for a Broadway audition.
But on NBC, it's great cross-promotion for The Voice.
It's true. It's true. Anyway, but getting back to Smash, I'm really, really loving it, and I think that, you know, everyone should at least give it a chance. I'm just kind of interested to see what people think, especially because I think that there are people who are going to be into it because they love Glee, and they just love musicals. And then there are a lot of people who were really upset with Glee and do not like that representation of the TV musical, and so I'm interested to see those people's reaction. And see, you know, what you think about it. So definitely go onto our iTunes page if you watched it. Let us know what you think about that. And then while you're there, you could also, you know, review the show and let us know just what you think about our show in general. And if you have any comments about that, we would really love it. If you go onto the TV Overkill iTunes page, have I said that enough? I review the show. And go ahead and rate it too. We don't mind.
Nope. Nobody is going to hate you for that. So, Christina, what did you love about television this week?
This week, I loved Brad's dentist dance on Happy Endings. That moment was just pure joy for me. They set up that he is the star patient at every single dentist exam he's ever been at. He's never had a cavity, never even had plaque.
Except for a plaque he got for not having plaque, guys.
Yeah! And then he goes into his appointment and he walks into the office. He dances into the office. And, you know, is winking at all the other kids, because apparently he goes to, a kid's dentist. His picture's on the wall. He, like, stops to flash a smile at that.
He kisses the hand of the receptionist.
And it's just, like, a beautiful one-shot little 30-second minute of joy. So, 30-second minute of joy. I don't know what's wrong with me. Uh-huh. Anyway, check it out. It was probably my favorite moment of all of TV this entire week, and I definitely loved it. And Alex, what do you hate about this week?
I hate that ABC, which is known for having a particularly bad daytime division right now, is still airing and supporting its new show, The Revolution, which I mentioned when we were talking about Huge, which is a daytime body empowerment show that replaced the just-canceled soap opera One Life to Live. and One Life to Live was getting about 3 million viewers a week, a little less, because it was like getting so good and it's fantastic and you should find it on YouTube. And The Revolution is now doing half of that audience, and yet wow, everyone's saying it's success, which it isn't. Hate you, ABC Daytime. Really glad you fired Brian Franz. Not good enough for me.
Yeah. Oh, and just kind of on that topic, just programming-wise, I do think it's interesting that the current drama director of NBC, who developed shows like Smash, came over to NBC this spring from Showtime, where he was responsible for developing shows such as Shameless and like all of their current, you know, new hit shows. But he was not involved in the development of House of Lies. So I think it's interesting that he definitely is like bringing some punch to the NBC world, and Showtime is already flipping without him.
Although, wouldn't he have been the one to have canceled Party Down? No, that was Starz. What am I saying? Wow, wrong network. I just feel like a failure right now.
It's fine.
A failure.
It's fine. Anyway, we're going to talk about Party Down soon, because apparently we really need to.
Yeah.
That's it for this episode of the TV Overkill podcast. We did want to let you guys know that we started a Tumblr,
tvoverkill.tumblr.com,
and it's just going to be a blog where we post links to the podcast episodes, and then between the episodes, since we, you know, usually have a couple weeks, if not a month or so, we'll be putting up posts just about, you know, our current thoughts on shows, maybe something that we didn't have time to say during the podcast or didn't
keeping
think
the
of.
Criticism alive.
Exactly. So we might add comments on there just so, you know, you guys can interact with us, but we would also, again, I know I already said this, but please comment on our iTunes page. Comments, ratings, reviews, that's how, we get more popularity, and, iTunes starts to feature us more and moves us up from like the like 27th page if you search for a television related podcast.
And I've always wanted to be popular. Like in high school, that was my number one goal.
Exactly.
I completely stopped having all my other friends, and I went for it. I mean, we didn't speak, remember?
Alex and I never spoke during high school.
We never spoke in high school.
It was rough.
It was a hard time, but I did what I had to do.
So if you are enjoying the show, let us know that. If you have a problem with us, we want to know. We just want to make you happy. So definitely check in with us about that. Do we have anything? Oh, and if you want to check out Alex and I, our personal thoughts on things, my Tumblr is privilegedwhitegirl.tumblr.com.
And mine is alexandra-ewing.tumblr.com.
So we hope that you guys tune in for the next episode of TV Overkill Podcast, where we'll probably be talking about Downton Abbey.
Yep.
Because we're classy like that.
We're pretty classy people.